Michigan, D.C. On the interstate, we were wide awake, living the dream. Oh, back in the heyday, we were doing all right. We could make it up as we go. We were young and crazy. We were living the life, didn't know what we didn't know. I'm not gonna lie, I wish we could. We'll be right back.
Look in her eyes, and I see that it's good, and I say to myself, look in her eyes, and I see that it's good, and I say to myself, look in her eyes, and I see that it's good, and I say to myself, I'm
That was a big set there. That was Letters to Cleo with Good Right Here. Before that, The Nines with Melanie, The Explorers Club with Forever, Splang with Understood, Velvet Crush, Time Wraps Around You, The Argument, that's actually new music from them, song Heyday, and we started that set off with The Damwells and Without a Heart. I want to tell you about one other show we have here in WRCT. Hey, do you remember that kid you picked on in high school? Well, we gave him a radio show. Tune in and hear the Mockster spin the best and worst in indie, punk, classic country, power pop, and so much more. That's Viva La Mock, Friday night starting at 9 with an encore on Tuesday afternoon starting at 5. Exclusively here on 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh. Okay, we are on the home stretch. Next up, new music from Fruit Bats. The song is called Russian River Valley.
Don't you come in my way, for I knew who you were. Like the fog in my thoughts in a beautiful blur. There was a ripple in the air before you walked into the room. But then I me
on the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh, ooh, the way that things have been. Oh, ooh. Second thing, second, don't you tell me what you think that I could be. I'm the one at the sail, I'm the master of my sea. Oh, ooh, the master of my sea. Oh, ooh. I was broken from a young age, taking my soak into the masses, writing my poems for the few that look at me, talk to me, shook to me, feeling me, singing from heartache, from the pain, taking my message from the veins, speaking my lesson from the brain, seeing the beauty through the pain. You made me a, you made me a believer, believer. Pain, you break me down, you build me up, believer, believer. Pain, oh, let the bullets fly, oh, let them rain. My life, my love, my drive, it came from pain. You made me a believer, believer. Third things, third, send a prayer to the ones up above. I'm the hate that you heard, it's turned your spirit to a dove. Oh, ooh, your spirit up above. Oh, ooh, I was choking in the crowd, building my rain up in the cloud, falling like ashes to the ground. Open my feelings, they were drowned, but they never did, ever lived, ebbing and flowing, inhibited, limited, till it broke open and rained down. It rained down like pain. You made me a, you made me a believer, believer. Pain, you break me down, you build me up, believer, believer. Oh, pain, let the bullets fly, oh, let them rain. My life, my love, my drive, it came from pain. You made me a, you made me a believer, believer. Last things last, by the grace of the fire and the flames, you're the face of the future, the blood in my veins. Oh, blood in my veins. Ooh. But they never did, ever lived, ebbing and flowing, inhibited, limited, till it broke open and rained down. It rained down like pain. You made me a, you made me a believer, believer. Pain, you break me down, you build me up, bullets fly, oh, let them rain. My life, my love, my drive, it came from pain. She made me a, you made me a believer, believer.
That's new music from Ken Stringfellow, who you may remember from the Posies. That's a song called Believer. Before that, the Fruit Bats with Russian River Valley. And yes, I should have timed this better. I'm out of practice. Everybody just leave me alone. Anyway, that is just going to about do it for me. This is DJ Chris Wired. You've been listening to Breakfast for Dinner. I almost forgot the name of my show. That's wonderful. It's been a long day. Anyway, that's about it for me. Quick programming note. We should be back next week, but then the week after Christmas Eve, we will be on with the annual Breakfast for Dinner holiday special. I got a ton of stuff I got to go through and see what we're going to play for that, but it should be good. So that is actually on Christmas Eve, so we'll be playing it. So, you know, just leave your, you know, Christmas Eve dinner table and listen to the show. Or listen during dinner. That's even better. There you go. Anyway, that should do it for me. I am going to leave you with one last song. This is from Jamie Hoover, this song called Repo Man. Thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in next time.
I like to start my work day at the crack of dawn. Little does she realize the car's already gone. I'm James Bond in a leisure suit and a pinky ring. I'll give you even money that you never heard a thing. Yes, I'm your friendly repo man, taking anything I can. Just an honest businessman. There's nothing more American than a repo man. Try to hide your pickup truck at your grandma's place. You're more than likely wake up to an empty parking space. I'll run my finger up and down a subwoofer knob to hide. Then I'll violate you till there's nothing left inside. 'Cause I'm your friendly repo man, taking anything I can. Just an honest businessman. There's nothing more American than a repo man. I don't need a reason, I don't need a rhyme. It's always open season, always sowing time. Intelligent design. Until you pay the balance off, your sorry ass is mine. 'Cause I'm your friendly repo man, taking anything I can. Just an honest businessman. There's nothing more American than your friend.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh.
Never gonna wake up in an ordinary bed. Swear you're never gonna. Sunday morning brings the dawn in. It's just a restless feeling by my side. Early dawning Sunday morning. It's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know. It's all the streets you crossed not so long ago. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I'd written an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle, and one of the readers saw my article, read it, and asked if I would go to the prison system and evaluate his Skills for Life program, which is similar to Toastmasters program, and give him feedback and seeing how the inmates would be able to improve their communication skills to transition from the prison system back into society. And I agreed to go and evaluate his program because I was in American Leadership Forum, and one of my assignments was to put myself in the place of another person.
Tammy Lane Campbell, founder and executive director of Honey Brown Hope Foundation. Founded in 1991, the Honey Brown Hope Foundation is a nationally recognized, award-winning 501c3 nonprofit that plants seeds of hope from the schoolhouse to the courthouse and jailhouse. Campbell is a revered activist who has made the leap from rural Mississippi to become a nationally recognized civil rights leader. The foundation offers programming, resources, and support that align its causes, civil rights, diversity appreciation, and environmental stewardship. Little did Campbell know when she accepted that invitation to evaluate the educational program in the Texas prison system, she would meet Jarius Elam, a man convicted of aggravated robbery in 1984 after he was arrested for an altered credit card and driver's license that a co-worker tried to use at a juice store. I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the case of Jarius Elam with Tammy Lane Campbell. In Black America.
Jarius, in 1983, was a black college student at Texas Southern University, a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, a young man, married and committed, father of four. But despite having no criminal record and no evidence linking him to the crime, he was convicted of aggravated robbery, of a white man who was found dead with a gunshot wound to his head on the campus of Rice University in 1983. So, with that being said, this is an egregious case where Darius has been denied justice for over 40 years.
In 1979, Darius Elam left Chicago for Houston to attend Texas Southern University on a track scholarship. For 40 years now, he has languished in a Texas prison for a conviction many believe are based on lies and a bogus piece of evidence that has since been destroyed. In 1984, Elam was convicted of aggravated robbery after he was arrested for an altered credit card and driver's license that a co-worker tried to use at a shoe store. The credit card had been stolen from a man who had been found dead. With no DNA evidence and a false confession from a jail informant, he was locked up for a crime suspect at best. Born and raised in Chicago, Elam was the fifth of 11 siblings. He graduated high school in 1978 and earned a full scholarship to Texas Southern University, a historically black college and university. In January 2005, Campbell wrote an op-ed piece for the Houston Chronicle newspaper. That piece led her to meet Darius Elam. In Black America Spoke with Tammy Lane Campbell.
The Honey Brown Hope Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit. We are nationally recognized. We promote an appreciation for the environment and for civil rights, specifically focusing on post-conviction investigation and making sure that our people are given a fair chance in this criminal justice system.
So how long have you been involved in this crusade?
I have been involved for over 30 years, sir.
And what initially got you to become involved in this type of endeavor?
Well, what initially got me involved was a personal incident that happened to my child in kindergarten. And he was profiled by a police in kindergarten who was dating the principal and for standing up for his rights, and he felt that he had been mistreated because he was the only one told to go to the back of the line. He and two of his white classmates were running in the hall, and he took a stand, John, and his stand was he refused to sit in kindergarten style. And because he refused to sit in kindergarten style, the principal called her then fiancé, who she married later, to remove him from the class. This dare officer body slammed my baby and dragged him out of the class. So that is what initially got me involved. I became the president of our local NAACP, and trying to not only protect my son and my daughter, but other children. And it was imperative and still is, as that's one of the issues that we address as well in our civil rights initiative, is derailing the school-to-prison pipeline. Our children are set up in kindergarten for the school-to-prison pipeline. And when you consider how many jail cells are built based on the number of students who aren't able to read and write by the third grade level, then you know that it is a cash cow to really send our children to alternative school and to profile them at an early age and tag them for the criminal justice system.
Now, we met at the National Convention of the Urban League a couple of weeks ago, and you brought to my attention the case of Darius Elam. Talk to us about that, and I want to ask you specific questions on it, but why is this particular case dear to your heart?
This particular case, as with other cases, that are dear to my heart because it was a God-appointed case. No inkling that I would meet Darius, let alone to be advocating for him. I had written an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle, and one of the readers saw my article, read it, and asked if I would go to the prison system and evaluate his Skills for Life program, which is similar to Toastmasters program, and give him feedback and seeing how the inmates would be able to improve their communication skills to transition from the prison system back into society. And I agreed to go and evaluate his program because I was in American Leadership Forum, and one of my assignments was to put myself in the place of another person. And I was also serving on serving as the chair for the criminal justice reform for DA Milliton, Brian Milliton, who is our first black DA in Fort Bend County. So all of these things were rolled up in one for God's appointment for me to get to Darius. As I visit the prison, I evaluated the program, and as the residents, I call rather than inmates, prisoners, were leaving, and they were giving me their feedback in terms of what I had conveyed to them. One of the residents said to me, "Miss Campbell, do you see the man at the back of the line? He doesn't belong here. He's innocent." And with that kind of referral, recommendation, you know, it is quite difficult to get another resident that is incarcerated to give that type of comment about a fellow resident. So from there, as he came through the line and I told him that one of his colleagues had shared with me that he doesn't belong there and that he was innocent. Well, at that point, Darius was, you could visibly see the tears in his eyes, and he requested me, he said, "Ms. Campbell, I am innocent, and if there's anything that you can do to help me, I would greatly appreciate it." And he gave me the contacts of his family members. And from there, I've been fighting to get justice for him and freedom, which that is justice for Darius Elam, for right at 3 years. So Darius, in 1983, was a black college student at Texas Southern University, a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, a young man, married and committed, father of four. Despite having no criminal record and no evidence linking him to the crime, he was convicted of aggravated robbery of a white man who was found dead with a gunshot wound to his head on the campus of Rice University in 1983. So, with that being said, this is an egregious case where Darius has been denied justice for over 40 years. And he was initially charged with murder. When the Harris County District Attorney's Office they didn't have the evidence to convict, they changed that to aggravated robbery. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened. This man who was the victim, who was found on Rice University campus, dead. We're going to have to go back just a little bit. Initially, when Elam was arrested, he was charged with credit card fraud because he had given not an associate, but a person that he had met at TSU or Ride, he was at work at the Galleria and saw this young man. And the young man came into the store where he was working and asked him if he would give him a ride home, and he agreed to do so. And as they were leaving the mall, he said, well, I want to stop by this other shoe store because I'm looking for a specific pair of shoes. And Elam agreed to do so. And as he was waiting for him, Elam was just browsing around the store, and he saw him looking at a pair of shoes, and he said, well, would you like those shoes? And Elam told him, yeah, but I'll pay you back when I get my check. And when they went up to pay for the shoes, the person that he had given a ride, unbeknownst to Elam, used the victim's credit card and driver's license, and he had imposed his picture over the driver's license. Now, John, this is the thing. Now, the person who had the driver's license was black, and he had imposed his photo over this white man who had not been discovered as dead at mm-hmm. the time. But the cashier saw the discrepancy and called security.
Exactly.
And when security was called, the person that had given the ride yelled to him to run, but Elam didn't run. Now, Elam was on a track scholarship at TSU. He could have outran those security officers if he had chosen to, but he did not run. And the cashier told him, well, he's not the one. It's the other person who was using the driver's license of this person, which they thought at the time was just credit card fraud. And that's how he was arrested for credit card fraud. But very suspiciously, the person who actually had the deceased man credit card and driver's license, which was discovered 2 days after this event, only got 5 years and was convicted of credit card fraud. But Elam charges were upgraded to murder initially, and then when they couldn't make that stick, it was aggravated robbery. And so that's why he was arrested, charged, and convicted.
This is In Black America. We'll be back with more of our conversation in a moment. Now, Ms. Campbell, in reading over Mr. Elam's story, I understand that the investigative detective searched the crime scene for Mr. Bolden, who was the individual, Richard Bolden, who was the individual that was murdered.
Yes,
found
sir.
No evidence or DNA evidence of Mr. Elam being at the crime scene. But then 90 days later, I understand, allegedly, that a yellow sheet of paper was found with Mr. Elam's blood on it that hadn't been previously noticed from the investigators prior to that. Talk to us about that.
Yes, most definitely. As you said, the everything else that initially was logged in to evidence, and that was, I think, a bullet, a piece of paper, and this was little balls of paper, and shoes, clothing, fingernail clipping, hair, and blood samples that was found on the passenger side of the victim's car. Now, when the DNA was done on those original evidence, the DNA excluded Darius Elam as a contributor to the crime. 90 days later, another investigator HPD officer Leonard Cooper supposedly found a yellow sheet of paper on the same side as other evidence were found 90 days after the event. Now, this is very suspicious because anytime an evidence site is investigated, you have three investigators who logged off and documented everything that was at that crime scene. And in addition to that, you had photos, a photographer that came out that took pictures of everything. No yellow sheet of paper was found. 90 days afterwards, supposedly after the car was in lockup in the barn at HPD, the yellow sheet of paper with a blood spatter, supposedly, of the victims was found on the yellow sheet of paper. Now, let's back up a little. That yellow sheet of paper was when Darius was apprehended. Well, he had his notebook and everything with him in his briefcase. So he had a yellow tablet and everything. So what we believe is that that yellow sheet of paper was taken from his notebook, because why would you have just one sheet of paper that was found? And in addition to that, John, this is what is so suspicious, is that every piece of evidence that was found at that crime scene was kept by the county clerk, except for that yellow sheet of paper that was destroyed. Mm-hmm. Now, you know that is some kind of suspicious.
Now, Ms. Campbell, I also understand that there was some jailhouse informants involved in this case?
Yes, there were some jailhouse informants and HPD informant that I had demanded a post-conviction investigation and demanded HPD to do a post-conviction investigation. And as they were doing their investigation, they contacted their informant and asked him if he remembered the case. And he said he remembered the case, but he fabricated the whole story. He said, "I lied. That man never told me that he killed the victim, Mr. Bodum, anyone, that Richard Bowen, I'm sorry, Richard Bowen, that was the victim's name, anyone. And I just want to do the right thing." And so I never, it was it was some time that passed. HPD never told me the results of the investigation that the informant had told them, their informant had told them that he lied. He made the whole incident up of Darius telling him that he had killed the victim. And so at that time, I got into super mode, and God instructed me what to do, and we were able to hunt down this informant who had eight different aliases. Mm-hmm. But our investigator was able to hunt him down. Once we hunt him down and got, well, even before then, how I knew about the informant called me and told me that HPD was putting pressure on him in reference to Darius Elam case, which he had informed HPD that he never heard Darius admit to killing anyone, and that they had told him, well, he could be charged with aggravated perjury. He said, "But I want to do the right thing." And I said, "Well, I'm going to secure an attorney for you to go in to HPD." because he was very frightened. The next day I called him and told him we had secured the attorney. He had agreed to give an affidavit, but she was out of town and took about 3 days to get back because she was in California on another case. And by the time she had gotten back, he had ran scared and called me and told me he didn't want to speak to anyone about it, you know, so to not call him even reference him in reference to that case. Now, I remind you that he was the one that called me and had agreed to give me an affidavit, but I told him I'd stay in my lane, the reason I got an attorney for him. But as I said, what we did is we got a hearing on the case December the 7th of 2020, mm-hmm. 2022, and which was last year. And was trying to get the truth out of him, thought that he would tell the truth in court, but he by that time indicated on the witness stand that he didn't recall talking to me, talking to HPD Sergeant Rodriguez, who he had initially recanted, and we served the HPD Sergeant Rodriguez subpoena as well to testify. So when, you know, he gave his testimony in terms of the informant recanting his recanting his original testimony of 1983 that he had heard Darius Elam admit to killing the victim. And everything that was, you would think, was solid evidence in terms of this informant getting on the witness stand line. I had also witnessed that he had called me and contacted the foundation in reference to him making that story up about Darius Elam. And to our surprise, Judge Josh Hill and the special prosecutor from Brazos County indicated that they felt that this informant was a reliable witness when he got up on the stand. And first, he denied ever speaking to me or remembering speaking to me or to the sergeant. And then he said that he never spoke with me. Well, we had all the evidence, the text message, of course, his contact information, where he, it was apparent that he had spoken with me. And then you had HPD who had reached out to him. But the Texas Court of Criminal Appeal upheld the original verdict of guilty from the lower court, and Josh Hill's recommendation to the Criminal Court of Appeal and the prosecutor from Brazos County both recommended to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeal to uphold the original verdict. But we did get one judge to, he abstained, and when you abstain, that means you're not in agreement with the other judges on the case. He dissented is what is the proper word for it. Mm-hmm. And it was Judge McClure, and he was the only one that dissented on Darius' case.
Now, Ms. Campbell, moving forward, what are the options that Darius has before him currently, if at all?
Well, moving forward, mm-hmm. Thank you for asking, John. What we are trying to get and what we initially was trying to get with the case with the informant is for Harris County DA and Brazos County DA Jarvis Parson and DA Kim Ogg here in Harris County to offer the informant immunity for a truthful testimony.
Tammy Lane Campbell, founder and executive director of the Honey Brown Hope Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and X. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's americanarchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
And folks, in the news this week.
On Sunday, human rights activist Cornel West addressed a crowd in front of the UN. He stressed that support for Palestinians does not mean hating anyone else.
And don't let anybody tell you that because you love Palestinians and Palestinian babies, that you hate somebody else. It just doesn't follow. What our brothers, we don't hate Jewish brothers, we don't hate Jewish sisters, we don't hate Jewish siblings. We loathe, we hate a vicious Israeli occupation.